Black Belt Selling with Stephanie and Anna Scheller. I'm Anna.
And I'm Stephanie.
We are a mother-daughter team who are passionate about helping you crush those obstacles, break through those things that are keeping you from making more money and realizing the life of your dreams. You can learn more about us by going to our Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/ Black Belt Selling. There we post content. There we have other people who share motivational. You can share motivational stuff. But most importantly, you know when we're going live on Spreaker.com and you can follow us there. So go to facebook.com/groups/ Black Belt Selling. Now, Stephanie, in today's episode, it was a lot of fun because we had an amazing guest. And This guy was one of the speakers at the Grow Retreat in 2018.
He was.
And when I talked to John Deaney, I remember I always, because I'm the MC of the events, at least I was this year, hoping to be next year.
Sure, yeah. No, yeah, you got to get me on camera saying that?
Yeah, exactly. So you've heard on Black Belt Selling, I am the MC for Grow 2019. Yes!
You notice how she didn't negotiate price yet, so this could actually work in my favor.
Okay, well, getting back to John, I always interview the people in advance that I'm going to be introducing at the retreats because I want to get a feel for who they are and I want their introduction to be memorable so that I can help people get ready to hear the content that they're going to be bringing forth. And I just remember when John and I got on the phone, he's an exit strategy specialist, which means that for those of us that are like myself, baby boomers, a lot of us are thinking that or we don't think about what we want to do with the business at the end of the business's life. What are we going to do? A lot of us think, well, we'll give it to our kids. Well, maybe they're not interested. So we have to look at strategies, exit strategies, selling the business, what that looks like. Well, anyway, getting back to my interview with John, John and I talked for probably a half hour, 45 minutes. And at the end of the interview, I just looked at him and we were on the phone. I said, John, how much do I need to pay you for this consult on my business? And he just laughed because he's just so full of knowledge and wisdom and he's funny. He's very funny.
He is. I thought it was hilarious. He was telling us, I can't remember if he mentioned it on the recording or before we started recording, but he told us that one of the ladies at the Grow Retreat came up to him afterwards and was like, it was like a revival meeting in here. It was awesome.
And we're going to talk about, well, I'm not going to take anything away. We're going to talk about why people in the retreat, why they felt that he was talking about them. Because up until that point in the retreat, it's all about all the things that entrepreneurs need to do to grow their business. Mm-hmm. And if you're like me or you're like Stephanie, you're thinking, oh, I haven't got that in place. Oh, I'm not doing that. Oh, you know, I mean, I had a lot of those moments through the retreat myself. And then he gets up there and he says, you know, everything you just heard? Well, don't worry about it because you are this personality. And that's when all of us said, yay. So anyway, we really want you to listen to this interview with John Deaney. You're going to love what he has to say. And then wait to join us at the end. And we'll have a few comments for you. And then we'll end the show. So see you in a bit.
Welcome to Black Belt Selling. I'm so excited, Stephanie, that we have John Deaney with us in our virtual studio. We had a blast with John at the Grow Retreat. And I just have to say, John, thank you for that consult that you gave me during that one little chat that we had together. I so appreciate all the good advice that you gave me, and you can send me the bill another time.
Sometime in the distant future, I'm sure. No, it was a pleasure, Anna. I really do. As I'm sure you could tell after, you know, a couple minutes on the phone with me, you know, my kids used to complain. They'd say, Dad, we'd like to ask you a question, but really, we only want the answer to the question. We don't really need to know how or how long or the history or why or what's next. Just answer the question.
You don't know anybody like that, do you, Stephanie?
No, not my father by any chance.
So what we wanted to talk about on this show, we are about sales. And so, first of all, tell our audience just a little bit about yourself. We've come to know you as the exit strategy expert, but you weren't always an exit strategy expert, right?
No, not at all. As a matter of fact, I know you have the books because Stephanie was flashing them as if she wished to throw them at me before. And as it says, as it says on the fly leaf of a couple of those, people call me a serial entrepreneur, but I'm really just chronically unemployable. I like to eat. And every time I didn't have means to eat, I quickly found another means to eat, and I wasn't too fussy about what it was as long as it put food on the table. So I was actually in sales. When I dropped out of college, I did finish college. I did finish an advanced degree later. But when I dropped out of college, it was the middle of a pretty deep recession. And I won't tell you which one because it will age me terribly. But it was before Star Wars. The first one, episode.
First Star Wars. Yeah.
Yeah, for you younger folks out there, before episode 4, which was the first one. So I was working in a warehouse. I was working on a loading dock, driving delivery trucks and unloading trucks. And they asked me if I wanted to come into sales. And I said, sure. Then, you know, I have better money than I'm making out on the loading dock. And proved to be pretty successful at that. And eventually that company asked me if I would go to California, this was in New Jersey, and take a partnership in their California operation conditioned on me being able to turn it around. And we sold that company to a German company, and that left me without means to eat. And then the next thing I did was turn around a manufacturer. It was an Australian manufacturer. I met them at a trade show, and they were having trouble getting out into the market, so I set up national distribution and rep networks for them. No, I love Australians. They're a lot of fun to drink beer with, but they're a little difficult to do business with. So after they finished stripping all the assets out of the company without telling me, their partner, I decided to leave that, and I went to turn around a medical group. And the medical group was in trouble. We turned that around. It was in deep trouble, but in healthcare, you can get away with a lot of things you can't get away with in normal business, like not paying doctors for a year. It was enough to buy time to work it out. And we eventually got them righted and built them up and sold them to a hospital chain, and I started consulting. I was living on the road. We moved from California to Texas. And my two young children started to complain that I had never seen a T-ball game. I had never been to a recital because I was flying back and forth, mostly to New York at that time. I had a lot of business in New York. Everybody tells consulting jokes. My consulting joke is actually true. How do you know when you've been consulting too long? When the Continental ticket agent for the 4:45 a.m. out of San Antonio to LaGuardia invites you to his retirement party.
Oh, Lord.
you become
wow,
too familiar
that was a lot of fighting.
Staff.
Wow.
So that's when I bought the alternative board. That's when I bought the coaching and peer group franchise, which I ran for 20 years. One of my contract facilitators that ran one of the groups for me was a business broker. He bought a business, and I took over his brokerage, and that's how I began working with business owners. I tell this story in the books, too. I would go to talk to a business owner, and they'd say, I'm ready to sell my business. And, you know, my degree's in accounting. I've got an MBA. I would look over their financials and say, you are so not ready to sell this business. And so I really was actually seriously looking for exit planning before I knew there was such a thing as exit planning. And I got a cold call from a salesperson in Denver from the Business Enterprise Institute, which is where one of my certifications is from now. And he said, would you like to come out to a boot camp about exit planning? And I said, you know, I've been kind of working on that. Let me come out and see what you have. And I went out and I said, this is what I want to do. And I almost immediately stopped brokering, handed all my brokerage deals to some friends in the industry, and started doing exit planning for owners. And that was in about 2010. And by last year, I had decided to give up my peer group franchise. It was expiring. I just didn't renew it and concentrate. Mm-hmm. And we were the largest peer group operation, single owner operation in the United States. So that's where a lot of my experience comes from, because I've coached some 400 business owners.
Which is actually how we connected, because someone was like, oh, Stephanie, you should talk to this guy. He's been running TAB. And so that was how that introduction got made, was because you've been running TAB.
Yeah, yeah. It's helped with exit planning, because obviously after 20 years, a lot of the members I started out with may not be TAB members anymore, but they're sure getting close to retirement. And they still know me and they still like me. And quite a bit of my work comes from people that know me from a decade or more ago that call up and say, John, it's time.
Yeah. Now, one of your books, your most recent one is The Exit Map, which is Navigating the Boomer Bust. So a lot of your stuff is boomers who are coming up on that retirement. And going through the book, there's a lot of stats that I've never even thought about. You mind kind of addressing how you ended up focusing? Because you do a lot of work with boomers right now, right?
Yes.
So how did you end up like turning it into this entire study where the first half of this book is just how we've gotten to where we are with the boomers all massively exiting?
Well, as I warned you offline, you know, you ask me a question and you usually get a lot more of an answer than you bargained for. It's kind of the same thing with the book. I mean, there's lots of books. I could hold up at least six or seven that I have in my office at the moment about exit planning. And they all kind of start out, well, the boomers will all be leaving their businesses and there'll be a lot of businesses for sale. And then they go into all the nuts and bolts and details of exit planning. And that's fine, but it's, number one, it's dry. And you've seen my presentation on hunting and you've read my book. Storytelling is a lot better way to get people to learn something than just say you could do a trust, or you could do an LLC, or you could do an insurance eyelid, or, you know, why? I wanted to write the book about why they need to be concerned about this and why it's going to be so important to prepare. And so the first half of the book is about how the boomers became the boomers. I wrote an article in 2007, a fellow named, two guys, Peter Chrisman and Richard Jackson, wrote The $10 Trillion Opportunity. And I read it and they said, oh, if you're a business broker or a financial planner, you're going to make $1 zillion because you're standing in front of the biggest wave of retirement in all of history. And to some point, that's true. But being a bit of a contrarian, I started looking at the buy side, because I knew as a broker, for every business that gets sold, it takes two, right? You need a buyer and a seller. So, yeah, that's great. There's going to be lots and lots and lots, millions and millions of people that want to sell their businesses. That's fine. Are there going to be millions and millions of people that want to buy these businesses? The answer really surprised me. In 2007, I wrote my first article for the Business Journal called Boomer Bust ? That said, you know, just looking at the demographics of this, I think we have a problem coming down the road here. And as I got deeper and deeper into it, then I was asked to present on it. And then I looked at some of the other stuff that you see in there about the psychographics and the sociographic impacts of a smaller generation and a generation that's been raised differently and has different values. And then, you know, started looking or listening really to all the things I was hearing from my boomer owners that I'm coaching that were trying to transition about, not only my people don't want to work the hours and don't want the same level of commitment, but they don't have the money, because over 30 years or so, the businesses we're selling have been built up to a nice level of income and they have real value. You know, you're not asking a 20-something person to come in and bootstrap them. You know, they have to have real cash. We're talking about millions of dollars. And, you know, the regulatory environment, I hear employees who are in the know, not entry level, but certainly managers go, oh, gosh, I could never deal with the kind of regulatory stuff you deal with and the reporting and the issues. And, you know, some of the other things that I put in there about the expectations of easy credit and such. I know I devoted half the book to that, and half the book is just talking about how the boomers wound up being in this position. But if you don't understand that, then all the detailed financial advice in the world is going to go in one ear and out the other. I know this is a selling podcast, but it's the same basic rules of sales. If you can't get your customer to understand what the need is and what the value is of what you're offering, they have no motivation to buy from you.
As you were talking, I was thinking the thing that I'm a boomer, and so I'm actually looking to position my business for sale one day. I have a timeline. I've got a lot of work to do. Thanks to you, listening to you and really thinking about it. Well, because people will say, well, I want to build a business to sell, but who's the end user? Who are we going to sell it to? Who are we building this business for? It's not just for us. It is for a sell. And from the boomer's perspective, you're right. People are not the same. The next generation that would be looking, the millennials, Generation X, whatever you want to call the next generation, they don't have the same bent that we do. They really don't. And when we try to come at something from our perspective, there's a disconnect.
Right.
Whether you're trying to sell a business or you're trying to sell a product or service.
The classic apocryphal comment I make about owners is, you know, I've got a lot of guys that say, well, you know, I'm going to run my business until I'm tired of it and I don't want to do it anymore. And then I'm going to find some young person that is willing to work 55 or 60 hours a week and go a few million dollars in debt for the opportunity that I'm offering to lock themselves in for the next 30 or 40 years. And I'm saying that buyer isn't out there.
You're not going to find them.
You know, it's like anything else. Sure, there's somebody out there. You know, the brokers always used to say, you know, there's a buyer for every business. But if there's 100,000 businesses for sale, and actually the numbers are about 150,000 small businesses for sale over the next, annually for the next 10 years, and the buyer you're looking for is one in a million, your odds are pretty terrible.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, and you know, I've had a lot of people who have bought businesses, didn't know what they were getting into. Now they're like, I'm never buying another business again. I'll just start from scratch, because they didn't end up getting a good one, or they end up either not knowing what they're getting into and regretting making the purchase, or they end up not making the purchase at all. Because, you know, a lot of times, like I've got people, like I had someone today, she goes, hey, you know, I'm going to sell my business. We're multi-million in revenue. I think I can get a nice paycheck for that. And I was like, well, the way the business sells isn't just on how much revenue you guys generate. Like, that's it's a little bit more detailed. Like, just because you guys are doing $2.6 million a year in annual revenue doesn't mean you're going to get, you know, like she had this idea in her head. She was like, you know, do what? 2.6 times three, right? That's the selling price. I was where did you get that number? Like, who would pay you that much?
And you know where they got it. They got it because she talked to a guy at a trade show that knew a guy in another state that sold his company for three times something.
Right?
It's on the internet.
Three times revenue is my favorite number.
Yeah, right. That was it. She was just like, actually, goes, so you were right. I was like, well, we need to have another, this is not a quickie conversation. Like, no, you're not selling your, that's not how this works. And people have this perspective that, you know, someone's going to want to come in, but like, you know, and you two were talking, right? The boomer perspective, here's the millennial perspective. Why would I pay for that? Why don't I just build it myself? Like, what's the point of paying, carrying all this debt? Right. Just have the same job. I could go start for maybe 100K.
And the jobs are different.
Right.
Mm-hmm. The jobs are different. For a generation that prizes time and personal freedom very highly, and in many, many cases, more than a set number, amount of income. You know, if they're at this level, they'll do something to reach the next level, but they know how much they'll do, and it's not anything to reach the next level. Or the boomers are like, I'll do anything to reach the next level.
And, you know, I mean, I look at, so a lot of millennials, They are very much into personal freedom. Mm-hmm. They're very conscious about different political issues that are really at odds with a lot of boomers. And I think this is also a sales point too. when you're thinking about sales, you have to think about the end user. You know, if you're looking to sell your business, like when I want to sell my business, just having this conversation, I'm beginning to think, okay, who's someone I want to target to buy this business in 3 to 5 years?
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, what are their interests? What are they going to want with this kind of business? And it may be that it's not a millennial. Maybe it's somebody that's getting out of the service, lieutenant colonel, or somebody who sees the value. There's a lot of moving parts to it that are, I think, critical. And understanding your target, well, I hate to use the word target market because it makes it sound like we're shooting arrows at people, but our ideal, the person that we are wanting to court in order to purchase, whether it's our business or our service. And I have to say that Stephanie is really an unusual millennial because she is not one that values free time over this.
I know. It's just it making me laugh.
She doesn't have free time because she's always calling me. Hey, mom, why don't we do this? Mom, let's think about this. You know, because we're talking about merging our businesses now, our sales training businesses, and so what do you think about this? I'm like, don't you sleep? She sends me texts at 3.
No, I found this amazing elixir. I only need like 6 hours of sleep per night now. It's amazing.
Great. You know, you talk about, you know, taking a sales approach to the business. When you go into something, you know, be it selling a product or selling a service, one of the first things you do, or at least one of the first things you should do, is understand who your competition is. What else is out there? What can replace you in the marketplace? What is head-to-head? What is similar? And the issue for the boomers who own small businesses is they're not paying attention to their real competition for these younger people. You know, they're saying, well, of all the businesses like mine, I'm the only one that pays healthcare benefits. You know, so that's a big plus. Well, it is if that was your only competition. But the fact is, you're competing for these workers, for these potential entrepreneurs with corporate America on a level that no one has before. It's an uneven dogfight. Since 2008, the number one concern of international 1,000 CEOs has been replacing our boomer knowledge base. We need new people, and they know it. And so as somebody looking for an ambitious entrepreneurial candidate as a small business owner, you're up against a corporate America that's saying, wait a minute, we are socially conscious. We're green. We have programs. We support charities. And by the way, we have redundancy in your job position. So if you need to take a sabbatical, it's okay. Family medical leave, of course we have that. Hot desking, job sharing, telecommuting, yeah, you don't have to be here every day. It's okay with us. You know, and the small business owner is saying, when I say 8 o'clock, I don't mean 8:05.
Right.
They don't compare really well to a millennial trying to decide what they want to do.
No, I think the millennial mindset, have you ever read the book, The 4-Hour Workweek by Tim Ferriss?
Yes.
And that, I think that like encompasses what all the millennials want at this point is I want a job that I, like his whole book has taken off because we all want a job where I can go be in China for 6 months.
Right. And I tell people, and I'm not the biggest fan of, I don't know Tim, but I'm not the biggest fan of the book. I'm saying, so you think it's valid that if you can find a product that you can get enough margin out of that has ridiculous multiples of margin and not handle it and not touch it and pay somebody else to sell it for you, and at absolutely no value, except you push the paper in the middle, that is a rewarding career. And the answer I get from millennials is 4 hours, lots of money. What are you talking about? Actually, yeah. I have to be fair. I get that answer from a lot of boomers too.
Well, yeah, I wish it would work that way. As a boomer, as somebody who started late in life, with a business. So Stephanie was a teenager before we started to get serious about business, and we actually just kind of fell into it. I remember people would sit me down and say, now you need to have an exit strategy. I go, why? What do I need an exit strategy for? And I like what I do. And they said, well, don't you want to stop doing it someday? And at that time, when my kids were little and I needed something else to do with my life other than check on homework and drive kids all over 4-H and stuff, it's like, no, I like what I do. And then somebody really challenged me. I didn't have any idea of what I would do or create a business that could be sold. I mean, it sounded really good. You should be able to walk away and make millions of dollars on your business. Well, I will, but I know the work it's going to take now. Yeah. I know what it's going to take, but I also know enough to see that it's not what I thought it was.
Well, there's this belief that we're all going to be a Dollar Shave Club where, you know, they went, you know, third year in business, what did they do? 350 million in shipping razors across the country. Mm-hmm. Right. Well, you know, you're not going to get it to be that successful that quickly. Like, it doesn't work like that. And I mean, not for most of us, not for the vast majority of us, at least.
I have an owner that I coach who had some really good breaks and some really unusual opportunities open up in the last year. And he has doubled his profit and it was, he made good money before and just can't hire fast enough to keep up, manufacturing company. And, you know, I kid him and I said, you know, Mark, it only took you 20 years to be this overnight success.
But you know, it's true. And the thing is it's the lessons we learn along the way, right, John? The where you are today, probably couldn't have even imagined it when you were working in the warehouse for the auto parts store.
No. I was always entrepreneurial. I'll admit that. I was always the kid that would set up the carnival in my backyard and convince the other kids to give me a nickel to ride my swings, you know, which to ride for free every other day of the week.
Today's special because you'll get a balloon.
Yeah. And, you know, even when I was working in the warehouse, I mean, at lunchtime, I had a detailing business for the other employees. And other people started bringing their cars. And the boss let me use the warehouse to pull them inside on weekends and detail other people's cars. So, I mean, I was always doing something. You know, I did have the book. You know, I'm born that way, but most of us aren't. You know, very, very few of us just have that singular focus. I don't know if you guys know John Warrilow. He wrote Built to Sell. He lives in Toronto, and he built this current system and had the very successful book. He had a data-driven marketing agency that he used to work for large multinational corporations. So John always has great data, you know, to put together with his stuff. And John says that the 2% of us are mountain climbers. You know, we will do anything to grow. We will take outside money. We will take partners. We will hire people. We will give up our own job title if we need to, as long as it keeps driving that growth. 24% of us are freedom fighters. You know, we're in business for ourselves just because we don't work and play well with others, and we don't want anybody to tell us what to do. And the, yeah,
I wasn't going to say anything.
About 74% of small business owners are tradesmen. You know, they do something, they do it well, they eventually realize that they get to put more margin in their pocket if they did it for themselves instead of doing it for a boss, and they went out and started doing it for themselves. And maybe, as I say in the hunting book, you know, the first big gut check is when you can't do it all yourself and you have to decide, are you going to stay like this forever, or are you going to hire an employee? You know, that's what really makes it into a business. And some people never make that curve. But even the ones that hire an employee, they still, you know, you can tell them because they still probably say that they, whatever it is that their business does, they can do it better than anybody that works for them. So after I heard that lecture, it was just this last summer, I've known John for a while. I sent John an email. I said, John, thank you so much. All these years, I thought I was a failed mountain climber. You made me realize I'm just a very successful freedom fighter. I don't work and play well with others, and I'm happy being this way.
that would definitely. And by the way, for our entrepreneurs out there, or you know, I think you even say at one point in the book, you say for those of you who want to do well as a hunter, right? This book, Hunting in a Farmer's World, just made everyone like it. It was funny because, and I mentioned this to John off camera, but said, you know, everyone came up to me throughout the retreat and they kept being like, oh my gosh, like I feel like I'm a terrible business owner now. I never realized there was so much to do. And I've got this huge list of all these things I need to fix and address. And I'm panicking. And after John went and talked about this one, it made everybody feel so much better. Like, oh my gosh, this is who I am. It's like, is that release that John gave you, or that your friend gave you, John, that was like, oh my gosh, I'm not crazy. I'm not insane. I'm a hunter. Like, this is awesome.
Captain Kirk. I'm Captain Kirk. Maybe yes. You can share with our listening audience the Captain Kirk analogy that you shared with the group at the retreat, John.
Sure.
I think there are a lot of people that would really relate to either Spock or Kirk.
Well, you know, when we talk about hunters and farmers, and by the way, there's a number of folks, and I've got recommended reading on a couple of my websites that say, for books like Rocket Fuel by Gino Wickman, who talks about the same thing. He talks about the visionary and the integrator. And the hunter is the one that's linear, the one that goes in straight lines. The farmer is the one that goes through the business cycle and improves it a little bit this time and a little more next time and a little more next time and keeps building it up incrementally. And, you know, Kirk and Spock, you know, the great bromance of the 70s and 80s. Spock is clearly smarter than Kirk. We know that. He's clearly stronger than Kirk. You know, Kirk can't do the Vulcan death grip on your shoulder. or mind meld or anything else like that. You know, Spock can take on anything. You know, and he's a human computer besides. So, you know, why is Kirk the captain? Because Kirk has the vision. Because Kirk is standing there saying, I don't know what the answer is, but we're going to try this. And if it doesn't work, we'll try something else. And if that doesn't work, we'll try something else. And Spock's the one standing there going, Captain, you have a 96.3% chance of failure with this plan. Kirk doesn't care. You know, if this doesn't work, I'll find another plan. If it doesn't work for Spock, it's a failure. The plan didn't work. My planning has failed. Kirk shrugs it off. Kirk said, go on to the next thing. Let's go. You know, as I said in the presentation, every once in a while, Kirk gets in over his head. He can't get out. And Spock can do hunting type things. It's not that hunters are inferior or less intelligent or afraid. They just prefer to be farmers. I'm sorry, they're saying hunter farmers. They prefer to be farmers. And they like working that way, and that's what they like to do. And they're about 97% of our population, so you better get along with them, because if you have an organization of all hunters, you're going to kill each other.
Yeah, right.
So, you know, for a good hunter needs a good farmer. Yeah. You know, every Kirk needs a Spock, or he would fail all the time. Because Spock's the one that makes sure the T's are crossed and the I's are dotted, and everything's lined up the way the plan calls for it to be. And Kirk is too scattered to do that. He can't bother with those minutiae, with those details. So it takes two. But the problem, and what, you know, Stephanie, you referred to how many people were happy to hear what I presented, it's because management is a farming occupation, and it's cyclical, and hunters are being told constantly, like you said, they go to lecture after lecture, read book after book, and it says, oh, Six Sigma, balanced scorecards, ISO 9000, you know, you need to have it together. You need to be, you know, manage what you measure. You need to have your numbers lined up. And they're going, I hate this. I hate this. I must not be a business person because I hate this.
Yeah.
And that's not true. You know, it's the same thing with sales. Again, going back to black belt selling. How many companies have you seen screw up a great salesman by making him a salesman? You hunt. Manager's a farmer.
Yep. Yep.
I remember the first time I was out, I definitely leaned toward the hunter. I have farmer's tendencies, but I just remember the first time I got somebody into one of my apartments, and after I got him to sign the lease, I was like, it was a letdown. The hunting, the looking, the finding, the deal making was so much fun. I heard somebody say, and no matter where you are on the Trump side of things, Trump actually is not a lover of money. He's a lover of deals. He loves to make deals. It's, I mean, the money means that you've done a good job, but it's really about making the deals. It's about hunting. It's about finding, you know, it's about negotiating. It's the thrill of the win, especially when it's a good win, mm-hmm. and everybody wins.
And when you yeah. and when you were let down, it was because you're instinctively saying, "Okay, next."
Yeah, like time to move on. We got this deal. Let's move on.
I know the deal is fun. My husband thinks I'm crazy.
Well, it's funny. I tell people, I'm like, that's where I get, like, I don't need to do drugs. I don't need to smoke. I don't need to do it. I get all of my highs just from going on stage, closing deals, and running around like a chicken with my head cut off.
Yeah. Yeah, that's why I have, you know, I have the writing. I have the speaking. I still do some peer groups as an independent contractor. I have my coaching practice. I have the exit planning. And then I have, you know, at 66 years old, I have an internet startup that I'm doing all this other work so I can pour it into funding for my internet company.
And that, ladies and gentlemen, that is exactly what we're talking about here. Well, John, I know we've been going, and this has been a true pleasure to have you on. You are so much fun to talk to.
Well, really, thanks for having me, guys, and I'm really glad you followed up with it. And loved working with the two of you. Look forward to doing it again.
Well, we will. I'm sure we'll come up with something. I don't know what, but hey, you know what? Here's the thing, right? This is the Hunter. Let's just come up with. We'll come up with something down the road. Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah, we'll make it up. Yeah, my dad has a barn.
Right, like that. Yeah,
she has a horse.
Let's put on a show.
I'm so excited now. All right.
Stephanie doesn't get the old Andy Yardy references. No. You remember those, Anna? The old Mickey Rooney movies?
Yep.
My dad has a barn. I know how we can raise money. We'll put on a show.
And she'd be there with the horse, too.
Yep. I would be. Hey, you know what? It's a barn. It's That would just combine my two loves of horse business. Like, that would be amazing. I need to do that. Okay. So for our listeners out there, hey, this is what Black Belt Selling is about. It's about bringing you guys these amazing, amazing people. John, you were a true joy to have. I listened to everything. I just think I could listen to you forever. Do you have a podcast? You should have a podcast.
No, I don't. I don't. I have my blog. I'm old-fashioned. I want to go back and redo my words 10 times before anybody else sees them.
Ah.
So my blog is about exit planning. That's at wakeat2o'clock.com. And and I don't have to explain to any business owners what that title is about.
Nope. No. I don't think you have to explain that to our sales reps either, because most sales reps, and this is where I always tell people, right, like when you get a good salesperson, don't mistreat them, because the second you do, they will take off and go start their own business because they can sell it. And then you can figure out how to fulfill on it, but they can sell it. Do not mistreat. So I think for our sales reps, this was a really good one, because it brings in so many pieces of what makes us work as salespeople and as entrepreneurs and as individuals that are adding to value to society. So I will just wrap up with that one again, John. I think we can anoint him an honorary black belt of business.
Yes.
So I'm Stephanie, here for Anna and John, our newest black belt of business in Southwest and Central Texas, bidding you guys to join us again next week. And don't forget to go check out our Facebook page.
Arigato, sensei.
You know, Stephanie, John on this interview was just as good as he was in person. I really, really enjoyed, especially hearing about the baby boomers. Actually, really, we have to think about, and this is really a good sales tip. Really, sales is about who is your end customer? How do you prepare yourself to serve the end customer? Because just because I love a product, just because I love my business, it doesn't mean that everyone else is going to have the same fuzzy, warm feeling. And we're selling to millennials. We're selling to a new generation that doesn't have the same drive or the same kind of proclivity to do the same things that we were doing in order to keep a business going. It's just a very different world.
I think it's the millennials just have different drivers. It's not that they're not wanting to make that impact. It's just, you know, this was something we didn't really get into. You know, a good follow-up to this for our listeners would be go look up Simon Sinek on millennials. And that's Sinek, S-I-N-E-K. And he's got a really good piece on what differentiates and makes millennials really stand out. And it's been really... It's been, of course, a fight, right? Of course, we've got, you know, I'm technically a millennial. You're a baby boomer. We've got a bit of a generation gap. And just a little one, right? You know, it's been interesting to see, and I will admit, you know, listening to these two talk on that interview, you know, they're all like, oh, us boomers, yay, we're all like tight like this. I'm all like... all right, I'm over here going, okay, So what about us millennials here, right? But see, my thing is I think there are millennials out there who want to do it, but they want to do it on different terms than the boomers. And the boomers just expect someone's going to want in and come take it over on the exact same terms, and that's not what's happening. And that's where a lot of this gap and bust is coming in, as they refer to it.
Right, right. And we could just do an entire segment on the difference between different populations, because we do have to approach them differently. Yeah. And some people would say that, you know, we should just be plain and upfront in our marketing, which we should, but we also have to take into consideration the motivations, the drivers that are moving the millennials, because ultimately they are, and the next generation and the next generation, every generation has its own proclivities. It has its own predispositions for certain things. Like millennials, we were talking about in the show, millennials tend to be very green conscious. So does that mean that my company has to be green in order for someone to buy it? Well, not necessarily, but we have to be aware of it. We mm-hmm. have to know that if that's our end user, that's something that they're concerned about. Or whatever it is, human trafficking, whatever the end user's concern is, we need to be sensitive to those things. And that's just plain old good sales, whether you are selling a business or you're selling a widget. You need to know what your customer wants and what they need.
It's like someone was commenting to me the other day. He said, you know, Stephanie, you can have the best product in the world and you can know who your target market is. But if you go to that target market with the best product but the wrong message, you'll still struggle to make the conversion. And I think that's the big key. So there's three keys here, especially for our sales guys to take away is, you know, you've got to have the right target market. You've got to have the right product, but you also have to have the right messaging for them. And if any one of those three is out of place, you're going to struggle, I think.
Exactly. Well, it was really great having John on the show, but we should probably make this a wrap. So why don't you go ahead and tell people again where they can find us, and we'll let them go.
So join us as always at www.facebook.com/groups/blackbeltselling. And the reason to join us over there is one, weekly, daily motivation, because as Zig Ziglar said, motivation is just like bathing. We recommend you do it daily. So daily motivation, plus if we have to transfer platforms or whatever, you can stay in touch with us and know exactly when the new episodes go up every single time, so you can join us wherever we happen to end up now or in the future. And in the meantime, guys, I really do want to encourage you. Obviously, we have a lot of fun with these interviews. If you have a topic or a guest you'd like to see, drop by the group and let us know. We would love, 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 love to invite them to join us here at Black Belt Selling. In the meantime, you have two choices ahead of you this week. You can go out there and you can continue to live the life you've been living, or you can go out there and you can put in greater effort. Because even if you've been putting in what you think is your best effort, as you grow and grow, you'll have bigger ability to take on more tasks, to do more stuff. And so I'm going to encourage you, this week, go out there, put in more effort, earn the freedom to have the life you desire for yourself. That's all I got for you. I'm Stephanie, here for Anna. We are the Black Belt Sellers of Southwest and Central Texas, bidding you to make it a great week.